Thanks for joining us on The Record this Halloween. I'm Jeannie Yandel in for Bill Radke. And the standoff over a North Dakota oil pipeline continues. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe argue the pipeline threatens their water supply on the Missouri River and other sacred sites, and they say this land is actually theirs, according to an 1851 treaty. But the company building the pipeline, the Dallas-based company Energy Transfer Partners, say they own the land. And last week, over 100 protesters were arrested after occupying some of the land in dispute. Seattle Times reporter Linda Mapes was at Standing Rock late last week. She told me what surprised her about the protest.
One was just the sheer number of people who were there. So this is an encampment by the Missouri River that people started flocking to last April. And by now, you've had members from more than 200 tribal nations come to show their support, as well as people from all walks of life. The day that I showed up in camp, Maori people who had just come in from New Zealand were being introduced. And that's kind of how it is. Jesse Jackson showed up that morning. And it's a little bit like the fish-ins in Washington State in the 1970s, where movie stars started to come and people from all over the country started to come to show their support for the treaty rights of the tribes.
And for people who don't know what fish-ins are, this was when tribes here were fighting for their fishing rights.
Correct. And on the banks of the Nisqually River, you had violent confrontations with police, game wardens, literally with guns, and arresting tribal members seeking to fish as their treaties had reserved to them as a right off the reservation. And it wasn't until the boat decision of 1974 that that right was affirmed. And today, fortunately, we don't see that kind of violence on the riverbanks anymore. But it's interesting. You talked to Nisqually tribal members who went to Standing Rock, and they met elders there who had come to stand with them during the fish-ins. And so this is a circle of history that keeps being repeated in America, where we have treaties that protect the rights of Native Americans. Those treaties are broken, always for profit of somebody else. And that's exactly what we see happening here, where you have a Dallas-based oil company that wants to build a 1,200-mile-long pipeline through four states. And, you know, it started out being routed north of Bismarck, and then there were concerns about drinking water there. So what do? They take it down within a half mile of the border of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, 10 miles from their drinking water intake. And it's not only the tribe. You've had three federal agencies weigh in on this last April saying that adequacy has not been served in terms of a review for public safety concerns, historic preservation. There's never been an EIS for a project of this size.
An environmental impact study.
Correct. And so the tribe has cried foul on this and said, you know, you didn't adequately consult. You haven't looked at the risks. They've been very focused in their criticism. They call themselves water protectors. And, you know, to them, the Missouri River is a living relative, and they are guardians of their source of life, and not only for themselves, but for millions of people downstream. And the US EPA, in their letter to the Army Corps last April, they called out very clearly that there were millions of people at risk of this thing and that there had not been an adequate emergency response put in place in case there was a leak or a break. The Advisory Council on Historic Preservation said there had not been adequate consultation with the tribe as to precious sacred sites. You know, the Department of Interior weighed in and said, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of Indian acres of Indian lands that are at risk of this thing. And it's, you know, it's not to be just brushed aside as some kind of trivial concern or some kind of marginal concern or some kind of interest group. This is a sovereign nation, and they've been joined in their concern by more than 200 sovereign nations. And it's been a fight of particular resonance for Washington tribes who themselves have also faced these fossil fuel projects through their territorial lands and waters.
You brought up the fish-ins of the 1970s that happened here, and you talked about violent confrontations between law enforcement and tribes. What kinds of stories were you hearing from people at Standing Rock about their interactions with law enforcement?
Well, we witnessed some of this ourselves. I was there with Seattle Times photographer Alan Berner, and as we were standing there, we watched police officers chasing tribal members trying to get away on horseback, and they were chasing them in ATVs and pursuing by helicopter. And, you know, that's a very disturbing image to see law enforcement chasing Indian people on horseback. You know, that's something we've been seeing in this country for 150 years. And the sense of history here is just overwhelming. It's very bitter. I mean, for a lot of Americans, the image they carry in their imagination of Indian people is teepees and war bonnets and Sitting Bull and Wounded Knee and Custer's Last Inn. These are those people. This is that place. These are the Lakota Dakota people. And once again, here we are. You know, they're getting chased off a piece of land that's in the path of the pipeline, and law enforcement says, that's private land. You can't be there. You're in the way of our economic development. You can go down the road. You can go to the other camp, drum and sing all you want. Nobody minds. That's fine. Stay as long as you want. But we need this piece here, so beat it.
Well, Linda, when you were there, what did you hear from the other people who live around Standing Rock? There are ranchers who live there, the people who work for local law enforcement. What were they saying about this?
A lot of people who are on the sidelines of this really can't wait for this to go away. You know, the highway, the main north-south route to get to and from Bismarck has been blocked for weeks now because of the disturbances, and they're sick of that. They have to go the long way around. You know, if you're a trucker who's just trying to get the hay, you know, to the other farm, if you're someone just trying to get where you're trying to go, this is a pain in the neck. They don't welcome the notoriety. You know, this is, North Dakota is a pretty quiet place. There are only 725,000 people in the whole state. And this kind of uproar is not something they're used to or particularly comfortable with. We talked with people who are sympathetic to the tribes, but also feel that, you know, oil is oil. People need it. And they're just they're in the way of, you know, how many times have we heard this? They're in the way of progress, right? So there is certainly impatience and irritation with the sort of day-to-day inconvenience for people with the highway blocked, and also a sense that, you know, you can't fight it, so why bother? We heard all that for sure. We went looking for it. You know, we wanted to hear what other people had to say.
Well, Linda, you also said that at least a few federal agencies have weighed in on this and have said, wait, we're not really sure about this pipeline project going forward ourselves. Why is this still happening then?
Well, it's interesting. At the moment, it's actually stopped. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is holding one last easement that is critical to the project. They can't complete it without it. That's where the pipeline goes under the water. Secondly, the Army Corps has said they're going to consider whether to reconsider some of the permits they've already granted because of concerns raised about them. There's also a lawsuit pending in federal court. Earth Justice represents the tribe right here in Seattle, Jan Hasselman, and they made a try for an emergency injunction to stop construction that has not been successful. That's on appeal, and the judge has yet to even get to the underlying merits of the real case. So that's yet to be heard. You know, the clock is ticking. Winter's coming. The company signed, that's Energy Transfer Partners out of Dallas, Texas. They signed contracts with oil shippers in which they promised to start moving oil by the end of this quarter. Not only that, but those contracts were signed under oil prices in 2014 before oil prices started to sink. So those contracts expire in January, and if they have to re-rack those contracts under less favorable prices, they have said in court documents that could effectively cancel the project. So they are desperate to finish this thing. Meanwhile, the Corps still holds the last easement. They're considering whether to reconsider some of the permissions they've already granted. The whole world's watching.
Well, the stakes are clearly quite high for this, and what happens next? We've been hearing from people here in Washington State who are planning to go to Standing Rock that they are planning to stay through the winter, and it gets very cold in North Dakota. What do you think is going to happen next? This sounds like a standoff. I can't see how this moves forward.
It is a standoff, and when people say that they plan to stay, I believe them. I talked to many people in camp, many of them from Washington State. Roy Murphy, a 22-year-old Muckleshoot Indian man. He's, you know, the way they winterize their tent, it's a tent he shares with two other people, was with carpet remnants and a tarp. But, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, right? And the kind of determination that I was witnessing there is not the kind of thing that goes away. And you know what? Indian people have been doing this for a long time. But what's different this time is they also have a lot of allies. The amount of visibility of this conflict is spectacular. I mean, there's quite a lot of social media going on. They're not letting this go. And so they're not going to give up. The oil company is certainly not going to give up. I really couldn't say how this is going to come out, but I can tell you this much. Nobody's leaving.
One of the photos that I've seen on Facebook is of hundreds of buffalo running towards one of the areas where protesters have made an encampment. You saw that, Linda. What happened?
You know, sometimes as reporters, you witness historic moments, and I would have to say that's what this was. So to set the scene for you, you have armored personnel carriers and hundreds of police in riot gear steadily marching toward the water protectors, as they call themselves, on a bridge over a creek. So they're facing off against each other. This has been going on for hours. It's very, very tense. It feels like it's beginning to come to a kind of boiling point. And all of a sudden, seemingly out of nowhere, this gigantic, literally thundering herd of buffalo comes into view and sweeps across the prairie plains in the very direction of the camp that the tribe is trying to defend. And spontaneously, up and down the line of hundreds and hundreds of Indian people comes this cheer. They are overjoyed to see these animals, which are their spirit animal, and they're screaming, "Tatanka, Tatanka, stand back, they're very powerful." And tears, joy, to see their friends show up just when they needed them.
What did you think when you saw that?
I thought it was incredible.
That was Seattle Times reporter Linda Mapes. She reported from Standing Rock this weekend, and we're tweeting out a link now to her latest story on the standoff. And while you're on social media, you might be noticing your Facebook friends checking in at Standing Rock, even if they're not actually at Standing Rock. The stated goal of all these remote check-ins is to confuse law enforcement in North Dakota, who are purportedly using them to geo-target protesters. This morning, the debunking website Snopes investigated that claim and say there's no evidence that law enforcement are using those check-ins. We're also tweeting out their investigation now at KUOW.